Good morning. Our scripture reading this morning is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, found on page 810 of your pew rack Bibles. That's Matthew, chapter 5, verses 13 through 16 on page 810. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. This is the word of the Lord.
So not only is it a joy just to be here with you this morning, but it's also a joy to be able to bring the word, to present the word to you this morning. And I chose this passage because it's something that means a lot to us in our work in France. But I also think it is a text that addresses every Christian everywhere, no matter what church, no matter what town, time, whenever. I think it's something that's incredibly applicable to all of us. And so I wanted to start just by kind of helping us think about this fact that for some reason, we are obsessed with stories about hidden identities. And so think about like all of the fairy tales that you know where a poor girl is actually really a princess, or a beast or a frog or something like that is actually a prince. And it's not just fairy tales, but think about movies. Think about all the superhero movies of like secret identities and people discovering their powers or all these kinds of things. We have tons and tons of stories about people discovering a true identity, a hidden identity, something that they didn't completely know about themselves. And I think that we're obsessed with these stories, or we love these stories so much because we know that kind of once you know someone's identity, once you sort of figure that out, the rest of the story falls into place. So once you figure out who someone is, once you know who someone is, that says everything about what they're meant to do, who they're supposed to be, what their purpose is, what their mission is. And so here in Matthew 13 through 16, Jesus, in no uncertain terms, tells us, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. There's other identities in the Bible that we could talk about. So many other identities. You know, the Bible calls us children of God. It calls us saints. It calls us a royal priesthood. It calls us brothers and sisters. It calls us so many things. And each one is a clue kind of to our identity and our purpose and what we're supposed to be. But today we're going to look at this idea of what does it mean to be salt and light? What is Jesus calling us to here? And so first, I just kind of want to give you a little bit of a context, because we're jumping right into Jesus' words. We're in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, and so this is Jesus' first teaching in the book of Matthew, where there's five big chunks of teaching like this. But in chapter 4, he's already started his public ministry. He's already started going around. He's starting the kingdom message to say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And so he's calling disciples, he's healing people, he's teaching, he's doing all these things. But then we get to chapter 5, and it all kind of slows down, and it says, seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to them, and he opened his mouth, and he taught them. So he's got this group of disciples. He's going up to the mountain. But I think Matthew kind of wants us to see the crowds there too. It's almost like the spotlight is on the disciples, and the crowds are sort of overhearing. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is appropriate for this crowd. Maybe not. Maybe this dates me. But, you know, Monty Python and The Life of Brian, do you know this one? And so Jesus is up there preaching, and there's people in the back who can't really hear what Jesus is saying. And so they're saying, blessed are the cheesemakers. You know, what is he saying up there? But Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's telling them who they're supposed to be, and the crowd's listening in. And so the crowd is kind of the check on what Jesus is saying to his disciples. Jesus is saying, I'm putting you on display. Everyone else hears this. Everyone else knows what I'm saying. And so this is what you're supposed to be. So after laying out the upside down nature of God's kingdom, where the poor in spirit are blessed, the mourners are comforted, the merciful, peacemakers, meek, persecuted are all deemed happy, Jesus comes to the verses that we're looking at today, and what some have called the essence of the Sermon on the Mount. And I'd like to read it one more time. Lance did a great job, but I'd like to read it one more time just because it's such a short passage. He says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So basically, Jesus is saying, you're salt and light, so be salt and light. It's not something you need to become. It's not something you need to work for. It's not anything like that. It's what you are. So don't forget it. Don't lose sight of it. Don't get sidetracked. His words come with a promise, and it also comes with a warning. So what is Jesus saying? What does he mean? So when we look at the first two images, salt. Salt can be a little bit confusing because for us, salt is like, you know, avoid salt, hypertension, all those kinds of things that we think about. But Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. In the ancient world, salt had a lot of different uses. You know, they used it to flavor food, but also they used it as a preservative. And so you think in a time before refrigerators, this was very, very important. This was a crucial ingredient. I was talking to my son a while ago, and he had this, they were talking about Roman history, and they said, you know, our word salary comes from the idea of salt. And at least one ancient author said that Roman soldiers were paid a regular quantity of salt. And so it's unclear exactly what it's referring to, but a lot of scholars, a lot of New Testament authors think that what Jesus has in mind isn't just one use of salt, it's the fact that salt is useful. And so it's not just that it does this one thing, it's that it does so many things that it's indispensable. And so when he says, don't lose your taste, you can translate that as don't be foolish. Basically, don't forget who you are. Jesus is saying salt is useful, but if it spoils, if it's corrupted, if it's foolish, it forfeits its usefulness. So as a disciple, you're essential. You're crucial. You're needed. So don't shrink back. Don't be foolish. Don't squander your potential. Jesus is going to use you. The next image is light. And so that one seems a little bit more intuitive to us. So it's a little bit more straightforward. And Jesus' point is that light's purpose is to shine, to be visible, and to make things visible, to give light to everyone in the house, as he says. It's like being a city set off on a hill in the distance so that travelers at night can steer towards you, can see something there. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German pastor and theologian who was executed by the Nazis, wrote this. He said, "Discipleship is as visible as light in the night as a mountain in the flatlands. To flee into invisibility is to deny the call. Any community of Jesus which wants to be invisible is no longer a community that follows him." So light makes other things visible. It reveals the truth. So think about, you know, stumbling through a dark room versus just flipping on the light. For someone who doesn't know Jesus, you are that to them. You're the model, you're the pattern, you're the one who brightens up the room. So Jesus is saying, be useful to the world and bring the light that the world needs to come face to face with the truth. But Jesus also accompanies that with a danger, with a warning, with something not to forget, that we wouldn't forget to be salt, or that we would forget to be salt and light, that we would lose our saltiness, that we would cover up our light. And so there's a couple ways that I think that we lose track of that, that we forget that. And so the first way, I think, is that we forget that it's on the basis of the gospel. It's on the basis of what Jesus has done for us. So it's not about us. It's not about our goodness. It's not about the things that we do. It's about what Jesus has done. Paul wrote in 1 Timothy 1:15, he says, "This saying is trustworthy and deserving of full acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the very worst." And so we're not putting more moral excellence on display. We're putting the fact that we need Jesus on display. We're putting him on display. It's about what Jesus has done for us, not what we can do. And so in some ways, we're kind of like the moon. You know, the moon is this big ball of dirt floating in outer space. But when the sun catches it just right, it can light up the whole night. And so when we're turned towards Jesus, when we're turned towards the sun in the right way, we have this light that's reflected off of us, that's reflected to the people around us, to the world around us. In the same way the Bible invites us to taste and see that the Lord is good, it's kind of like people can taste, they can get an aroma kind of floating off of us. That's the aroma of Jesus. So it's his love at work. It's his calling that grounds all that we do. We're just doing what he did. We're just making that known. We're loved, and Christ died for us before we ever even did one good thing, before we even knew what good was. And so our mission is based off that good news. So if the first temptation is to forget that it's about Jesus, to forget that it's about what he's done for us, the second temptation is to think that it all depends on us, which is to say we forget about the Holy Spirit. If Jesus' work on the cross is the foundation, the Spirit is the one who actually makes things happen. You know, if you think about the image of light, it's like you can turn on a light really bright, but if people close their eyes, you can't make them see anything. And especially if someone is in the darkness, one of the things they want to do when a bright light comes on is they want to shut their eyes because it hurts. But what the Spirit can do is take our feeble efforts, take our words that to us don't even sound that persuasive, but to them can do something in their lives. So he takes our words and he turns them into something that they have more than any right to be. Once when I was in seminary, so we had just arrived in Massachusetts, and, you know, I was in classes and I was having these heady, some could say nerdy, theological conversations with people. Erin was in the process of trying to find a job, so we had just moved here, and so she was feeling discouraged being far from family and far from friends, and she was really upset, and one night we decided to pray about it. So we had just gotten here, and she didn't know anyone, and we prayed. And it was one of those times that God answered a prayer so quickly and so dramatically that it still resonates with me, it still shocks me. And so the very night that we prayed, a woman came over. We were in the seminary campus apartments, and a woman came over and knocked on the door and introduced herself, brought over cookies, and asked Erin if she wanted to go out for coffee sometime. And so this woman became one of Erin's best friends during the time that we were in seminary. But there was no way that she could have known Erin's need in that moment, and no way that she could have responded more perfectly, even if she had known. And so what the Spirit does was he took that humble act to communicate immense love to my wife. As much as our neighbor was a part of it, it was the work of the Spirit from top to bottom. So don't lose sight of the gospel. Don't lose sight of what Jesus has done for you. Don't lose sight of the fact that it's the Spirit at work within you. But lastly, don't lose sight of the fact that it's about the glory of God. Jesus says in verse 16, "So that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven." So ultimately, it's the Father who's honored, the Father who's glorified, the Father who's the one to be thought to be great. And I can tell you, after 13 years of serving the Lord overseas, this is one of the easiest, most subtle things to get wrong. This is one of the easiest places where we start to replace ourselves with God. We start to think, well, it's about our church, or it's about my reputation. It's about how we look and not about God. And so what Jesus says is that it's the Father who gets the glory. Think of John the Baptist, who, when his disciples come to him and they say, "Hey, Jesus, this guy Jesus is baptizing more people than you are," and they're going over to him. And his response was, "He needs to be more, and I need to be less." Or Jesus himself, who says, after you've done everything that you're supposed to do, say, "We're unworthy servants. We've just done what was asked of us." when you see someone act like that, when there's this true humility on display, it's like a glass of cold water on a hot day. It's like sitting down when you've been on your feet all day. There's something so refreshing, so satisfying, so beautiful in that. It's that people got a glimpse of Jesus. They got a glimpse of God at work, whether they knew it or not. They felt it. They felt it come through. You're so Christ-like in that moment, so much salt and light that you couldn't help being otherwise. And so don't lose track of the fact that Jesus died for you, that the Spirit is at work within you, and that it's all for the praise of God's glory. But what does this actually look like in practice? I've been talking theoretically about all these things that you're not supposed to forget, the things that you already are, but what could it look like right where you are, in your family, in your neighborhood, at your job, wherever? And I wanted to share just a little bit of how we do it in Paris, not because we're the perfect example, but because it's the context that I know best, and actually what we do is pretty simple. So about 10 years ago, I think 10 years, maybe a little bit less, we decided to start an association. An association is it's a club. And so it's a club for people to do good and make relationships. And so you don't necessarily have to start a club, but in France, everyone is more comfortable if it's a bit more formal. It's, you know, you're a club, you have a president, you have a secretary, you have all these things. But all we do is we decided that we would pick up trash in our neighborhood and we would plant flowers around a couple of trees that are in a square nearby. And so the thought is we just want to make the neighborhood a nicer place to be, just a more beautiful place to live. And so you don't have to be a Christian to join the club. It's not explicitly Christian, but we're honest with people who come that we're Christians who started it, and this is why we did it, because we want to serve the Lord and we want to make a nice neighborhood for people. And so years and years ago, we had about maybe two or three who would come out and help us on a Thursday night. But this past year, we've seen 20 to 30 people regularly coming out on a Thursday night to help us. And so what we'll do is we'll clean the street or we'll do some gardening for an hour, and then afterwards we'll meet at a local cafe and we'll talk for those who want to talk. And for so many people, it's something that has given them this thing that they show up to week after week. Even when we're not there, they say, well, can we still do it? Can we still, you know, can we borrow the materials to go pick up the trash and that kind of thing? And so we get opportunities to connect with people and over again to tell them about Jesus. Because in France, one time isn't enough. you have to keep telling them. And so there's a woman that I'll tell you about. There was actually an incident with her this week, but her name is Florence. And so the first year that we started this project, we had three different places that we planted around these three trees. And this woman, Florence, came by, and Aaron was watering, and she asked her who she was and what she was doing. And so Aaron told her, and she said, it'll never work. They'll trash it. It'll look terrible. So Aaron was like, well, you know, we're going to try anyway. Thank you for stopping by. Very encouraging woman. A year later, we're still at it. Aaron runs into Florence again. And she says, well, you know, we had planted around three trees. She said, one out of three looks okay. And so Aaron's like, well, thank you. And she went about her way. Saw her again. And she said, you know, can I add some plants from time to time? I like to garden. Can I put some plants in? Aaron's like, yeah, sure, no problem. And so here we are a couple years later, and Florence is part of the group. She's watering the flowers. She's taking care of part of these areas. And we're getting the opportunity to tell her about Jesus over and over again. We're getting the opportunity to pray for her. And this, when I had written this sermon, this wasn't part of my illustration, but this past week, she actually got in a fight with Aaron because she really likes to manage things, to put things in a certain place, and Aaron wasn't doing what she thought was right. And so Florence said, I quit. And Aaron said, you don't need to quit. I still appreciate you. I still love you. You can still be a part of this. And so over the course of a week, well, first she called up Aaron to tell her off. And then and then towards the end of the week, she kind of softened and said, you know, I'll still water. I'll still help. I'll still be involved. And so it's one of those things, especially in France, a lot of people they'll have a conflict with someone and that's it. You're out of my life. I don't want to be any part of what you're doing. And so to see someone who is just, no, I will continue to love you. I will continue to forgive you. I will forgive the fact that you said really hurtful things to me just to try to be mean. more than even just what we're doing in our activity. It's that interaction where someone gets a glimpse of the gospel, where someone sees that, no, it's not about us being better. It's not about us being right. It's about what Jesus has done for us. So you can pray for Florence, as you can imagine. But when all of this happens, people start to see who Jesus is. They start to get a glimpse. They start to feel what it's like to follow Jesus. And so that's us. That's what we do in France. But what could you do here is what I want to ask. Could you invite your neighbors over for a barbecue? Could you shovel their sidewalk or their driveway in the wintertime? Could you be the on-call babysitter for your family or your friends, or the one who people call because they know that you always show up to help? I once heard someone say that Christians should never need to hire movers, and they should never need to hire a taxi to get to the airport. It should always be provided. We should be the people that come up and are useful like that for others. But most importantly, could you pray for these people? The people that you serve, the people that you help, could you pray for them? For your neighbor that doesn't know Jesus, for your family members who are far from the Lord, or your coworkers who aren't sure what they believe, could you pray for them? If I could sum it up, I would just say pray and point. Pray for people and point them to Jesus. And I promise you, if you start doing these little acts of kindness, these little things that don't really seem extraordinary, they seem pretty banal, but if you're in prayer for people and you're doing these things, I promise you, you will have ample opportunities to tell them about Jesus. You will be able to invite them to church. You will be able to invite them to a small group, to a Bible study, to so many things, because you will be salt and light. Wasn't anything that you had to create in yourself. Jesus will use you to be salt and light in their lives. It will happen. So Jesus tells us who we are. He calls us into his work. And he's equipped us with the Spirit. So go and be salt and light so that the people around you would see the good, God-inspiring works that you're doing and come and worship the Father who's in heaven. Thank you.